Heidi Xers, welcome to Market Scope for June 2014. We're going to do something a little bit different this month as we go back to November 23rd, 1958, and enjoy the hits on KFWB, Channel 98, Color Radio.
KFWB Banner Lines, the world at your fingertips.
This hour's Banner Lines, presented by your friendly neighborhood Rambler dealer. A leading aviation magazine says the Air Force will launch a reconnaissance satellite next month. And Dr. Wernher von Braun, the Army's top rocket expert, says he doubts the Army will hit the moon on its next try. KFWB Weather Wire check in just a moment. Automotive history is repeating itself. Rambler, the only American car to increase in sales for 1958, is again leading the way with a sensational 59 Rambler. See it, drive it at your friendly Southern California Rambler dealers today.
Los Angeles climatological readings from the KFWB Weather Eye.
Mr. Weatherman, take the cue.
Going to be fog near the coast tonight and early tomorrow morning. Otherwise, occasional high cloudiness, but mostly sunny on Monday. Little change in temperatures. Low tonight, 50. The high Monday, near 80. Current KFWB reading is now 65, 65 degrees. This hour's weather has been presented by your Southern California Rambler dealer.
Complete details of these and other stories, plus a revised weather eye reading at 5 minutes before the hour, as KFWB keeps you ahead of the headlines.
Riding in my cab.
A dandy bit of doing for you, courtesy of the Playmates at number 3 on the KFWB Fabulous 40. It's titled Beep Beep. KFWB chronological type time. We have 27 before the hour of 7 o'clock in the evening. And don't forget, coming your way at 5 minutes of the hour, all the big news happenings of the day as KFWB checks instant news.
Are you embarrassed by skin blemishes? Here's important advice from popular Sonia Starr, a student at King School, Los Angeles. Ask for Clearasil, America's largest selling medication for skin blemishes, because Clearasil really works.
65 degrees in the line of the KFWB Fabulous 40, as we heard a couple of shakes ago. Beep, beep, and right now stand by for lots of big things happening on Color Channel 98 like this.
Night time is the right time to listen and enjoy. KFWB. So sit back and relax in pajamas or slacks. Time is the right time to listen and enjoy colorful songs. Channel 98.
Oh, somebody better wake me up. I enjoy things like that, I'll tell you. KFWB time, 25 before the hour, our pick hit of the week.
Candy.
Here's Tab Hunter for you on Sunday evening.
I call my sugar candy.
Because her real name is George, that's why he does that.
Because I'm sweet on candy.
And make her mine.
Make her mine, all mine. You know, it kind of flips me. You think about all the people who have recorded a song like this one called Candy, and years gone by, and then along comes one particular person, and wow, there it goes zooming up the ladder. This one, it's by Tab Hunter, our pick hit of the week on Color Channel 98. The Swingin' 7 DJs say it will be so. Let's see what you think. Tab Hunter and one called Candy. We have candy for you. If you consider Lutesville candy, I'll tell you, $5 in the big old Cash for Kids jackpot right now. As a matter of fact, we're going to be calling for somebody out on Lodestone Drive in Sherman Oaks. You know somebody who lives out there, pretty good chance that they'll win $5. All they need to do is to identify Cash for Kids card number 1228 within 5 minutes' time. The Cash for Kids card number again is 1228. KFWB time, 21 and one half before 7 o'clock. Make it in 5 minutes. You'll make yourself $5 on Cash for Kids. Here's Bobby Darin, that queen of the hop.
That's my queen.
Here we go, the queen of the hop, Bobby Darin, the number 18 song in the land of the KFWB Fabulous 40. KFWB time, let's call it 19 before 7 o'clock. And old Putney, you've got about 2 minutes to call in on Cash for Kids card number 1228. It's the number we called out about 3 minutes ago. You better get busy right about now on Cash for Kids from Color Channel 98. Oh, here's a dumpling for you. Little gal named Peggy Lee, a pick it a few weeks ago. Peggy, tell us what the title will be.
Sweetheart. Sweetheart. Sweeter than you.
Sweetie baby. Pretty Peggy Lee for you, a former pick hit here on KFWB, now at number 30. Oh, we dig that sound. It's one called Sweetheart. KFWB time, 16 and a half before 7 o'clock, and there's bad news in the land of the Cash for Kids. We had no winner on Cash for Kids card number 1228, which we called out about 6 minutes ago. It belonged to Jay Pinto, 3632 Lodestone Drive in Sherman Oaks. Jay, you better get yourself on the ball, my friend. You've lost a chance for $5. Had a couple of calls of people wanting to know how they could enter themselves into the Cash for Kids card game. It's quite simple. Just send your name, address, and your telephone number to Cash for Kids, Box 98, Los Angeles 51. Send it on a postcard or in letter form. Doesn't make a bit of difference. Send it to Cash for Kids, Box 98, Los Angeles 51, and be sure and include your age. I will, in return, send you your Cash for Kids card membership, our membership card, that is. And when your number is called, all you do is call KFWB within 5 minutes and collect your loot.
You never heard it so good riding around in your car.
KFWB.
Highway or freeway or driveway, wherever you are. You want to keep travel tune to 98. For music for miles.
Early or late.
Our mobile units keep you in the know of traffic conditions wherever you go. You never heard it so good in your automobile. KFWB.
KFWB rated number one by Hooper and Pulse both. They both agree. Thanks to you, KFWB is number one. I can't figure out why Mitch Reed keeps calling Bill Balance a lush. I don't think it's right to call a man a lush just because he's, you know, has bourbon and cornflakes for breakfast. After all, he does switch occasionally. He goes to scotch and soda crackers. A new one from Andy Williams. What do you think about this? Holly Loki turning Andy Williams, huh? Or Andy Williams turning Holly Loki, the Hawaiian wedding song. It's called a brand new addition to KFWB Sounds within the past few days. Brand new song from Andy is on. We go turning the tables between now and 12 midnight on Color Channel 98. KFWB time, 12 before the hour of 7 o'clock, and we've got bad news. We just discovered from the weather wire that there will be moderate to heavy smog tomorrow throughout the Los Angeles basin, with possible alert, oh, Wowsville, according to the Air Pollution Control District. So you better get out, as Bill Balance warns, those contact lenses and get yourself prepared for another smog day in good old L.A. Light, moderate to heavy smog tomorrow with a possible alert due sometime during the day. That's for tomorrow in KFWB land. And don't forget also tomorrow at 9 o'clock in the early bright to come along and join the golden voice of radio, Al Jarvis, right here from 9 until noon, followed by the happiest 3 hours in radio, the Joe Yoakam Show. To bring it to a close for hour number one of our Gene Weed Sunday evening session and song, let's call on the Diamonds. Walking along. A dandy bit of discreet, courtesy of the Diamonds on one called Walking Along. Watch it walk along up the fabulous 40 in weeks yet to come. Coming up on the second hour, we'll call on Louie and Keeley. Louie Prima and Keeley Smith and that old black magic to kick things off. We'll also be hearing from George Gary Abedian's players, Tab Hunter again, Richie Valens, Earl Grant, Ray Charles, Elvis Presley, Frank Sinatra, Georgia Gibbs, Fats Domino, many more on Color Channel 98 KFWB. That's all in hour number two of the Gene Weed Sunday Show for this is swinging November 23rd, 1958. And as we say, coming to a close, hour number one, we leave you with one thought. I hear they're going to make Hawaii a state. Have you heard that rumor? Well, it's quite possible. After all, Alaska has bombed we Texans. After all, yeah, they're going to make Hawaii the 49th state. I don't know. It doesn't make much sense to me. I don't think the flag's going to look very groovy with 49 stars and a pineapple.
And there's our 56-year trip back in time to remember KFWB and what a lot of pop music stations sounded like in the 1950s. Do you have good radio in your town? Why not share it with us? Send your recordings to me, Phil Wayne, at 7545 County Highway 71, Harpster, Ohio, 43323-9364. All of us editors and members would love to hear from you. And now, here are the musings from the members.
WMAK 1300. It's your swinging combination, your number one station.
This is Musings of the Members.
WMAK Nashville.
Hi, this is Mike in Aventura, Florida. I have a very interesting question for you. How many radio stations around the country have different languages besides Spanish? I just spoke to the accountant over at the law offices in Boston dealing with the radio station, and he told me that he doesn't think the station will come on the air. It's just a CP, and he has other interests. But that's it at the moment.
This is Tim Hendel. On the ongoing question of what to do about the AM band, I think the thing that the National Association of Broadcasters should lobby, pressure, insist, that the FCC crack down on the increasing interference on the AM band. I think this would do more than power increases and everything else to increase the viability of AM. After all, if you can't hear the station, at my location now for the past couple of years, all across the AM band are these very wide broadband humming carriers. Each one takes up about 30 or 40 kilohertz. And sometimes they make even a local station unpleasant to listen to. I have been told that these are harmonics of transmitters in the long wave band, which somehow enable the power company to automatically read your power meter rather than going around to each individual meters. Well, if these transmitters are operating in the long wave band, why are they so dirty? In other words, why do they put out so much RF that they shouldn't? Likewise, maybe they're from the digital lines of cable TV providers. Again, why can't the FCC crack down? I know the industry has the ability to filter these harmonics and this RF. After all, even a cordless phone or a little 5-watt handheld 2-meter ham rig has to be type-approved by the FCC. And God help the ham who interferes with anybody's television reception. Yet we're allowed to have this RF pollution, this junk, all across the AM band caused by industries that could lessen or perhaps completely eliminate interference, but this would cost them a little bit of money, so they're not going to do it unless the FCC makes them. So, hey, National Association of Broadcasters, why don't you start here? Once you get this junk cleared up, then you might address the question of viable formats on AM, but if people can't listen to the station, you're wasting your time to talk about programming.
This is John Wesley Smith from Hallsville, Missouri. I was very interested in the item about Cumulus and their woes in the May DX audio service. I really hate what Cumulus has done to the stations in the Columbia and Jefferson City area. I won't get into many specifics except for one, and that is the AC station that my wife listens to drives me nuts. I tell her kind of exaggeratedly, but it doesn't seem like it sometimes. But it seems like they play 20 songs and 5 of them are Taylor Swift, and then they change their rotation to another 20 songs in a couple of weeks or whatever. Anyway, seriously though, I really hate to see what they have done to our stations around here. And an interesting thing happened on the last Sunday in April. We had some severe storms come through that day, but before that happened, Columbia experienced a power outage, and the transmitter was off for 1400 KFRU, and that is a rarity. And you could tell that the power outage affected all the stations that are run from that particular building, because all of the FMs that Cumulus owns in Columbia and a couple that they own in Jefferson City were running nothing but carrier. Transmitters were on, but no signal. Very interesting. It says a lot in case storms would take out a central location for a station or a group of stations, or if there were some kind of sabotage or something like that. You know, these stations are left vulnerable, I think. And if you've noticed, Spanish on 1160 in mid and late May, it's because the station over in the Kansas City area, Cleveland, Missouri, is where they're actually licensed to. 1160 KCTO has been apparently not cutting back at night. They have 5,000 watts, I believe, for daytime power. And then on 810, I am in the know of WHB's signal being a couple hours to the east of Kansas City, and I've been picking up 810 from Sturgis, South Dakota, KBHB, fairly frequently here in mid and late May. Interesting. So they're doing country music, serving farmers and ranchers and so on and so forth.
Hello, DX Audio Service members. This is Mike Dukin calling from Hayward, Wisconsin. And I would like to also congratulate Fred and the Audio Service for its 29th year of operation. And I've been receiving the Audio Service since May of 1985, and I've enjoyed it ever since. I have a couple of format changes in the Eau Claire, Wisconsin area, the Eau Claire, Chippewa Falls area. The first one is WAYY 790. That's your old station. That's your old facility, Fred. Well, WAYY is now running CBS Sports Radio. They do it afternoons, evenings, and all weekend long. They've got some local things in the morning, but the rest of it is afternoons and weekends and evenings. And on 1150, your old call letters, WEAQ, now licensed to Chippewa Falls, as it has been since a while, they're now running the True Oldies channel. I'm just wondering how many people know that the True Oldies channel may cease to exist at the end of June because of Scott Shannon's contractual interest and the fact that he's working for another company, CBS that is. He's now doing mornings at WCBS-FM. So that means what they're going to do is they're going to replace the True Oldies channel with another Oldies network. I think they're going to call it Good Time Oldies Radio, and it's going to target ages 35 to 64, I believe. Well, I guess that's it for now. I'll just set this to 73s and good DX.
Hello, everyone. Joe Schwab. I'm the 20th from Richmond, Virginia, with a quick update. On May the 5th, 1140 WRVA introduced its LPFM on 98.5. So they're simulcasting, of course, on 98.5 and 1140. 73s from Richmond, Virginia.
And that is our musings to the members on this edition of the DX Audio Service. If you'd like to muse, give us a call at area code 419-741-0205, 24 hours a day for DX Audio Service and EDXN members. Keep it brief and to the point so everyone has a chance to speak. And by that, I mean if you call multiple times, make sure you get to your point real quick. And if each of those 12 calls is 2 minutes long, well, we have to edit it down pretty good. So keep it brief and to the point, and that way everyone has a chance to get their point out on the musings. To answer Mike Lance's question, probably the best example of multilingual stations is a company called Burrich Broadcasting. They have stations like WEW in St. Louis on 770, WGOP in Pocomo City, Maryland. That's on 540. WNZK up in Dearborn Heights, Detroit, Michigan. WWCS in Canonsburg, Pennsylvania on 540. WCXI 1160 in Fenton, Michigan, which is a suburb of Flint. There's a lot of stations out there that broadcast multilingual programs. You just have to go through the AM radio log and you can dig them out.
Since April of 1985, this is the DX Audio Service, a nonprofit organization devoted to the radio listening hobby.
Talk radio on hold against low ratings, changing audience, by Luke Jones. This article appeared on the website, www.arkansasbusiness.com. Talk radio, long a bastion of charismatic conservative show hosts, may be reaching a turning point as ratings fall and audiences change. The most telling evidence of this is the fact that Rush Limbaugh's January move from KFI AM 640 to KEIB AM 1150 in Los Angeles, where KFI once was the number one station in the market, failed to make a difference in either station's ratings. KFI has remained mostly flat and sits at number 10 in the market with a 2.9 rating, while KEIB, which changed its call letters to reflect Limbaugh's slogan, Excellence in Broadcasting, has maintained about a 0.5 rating since the station rebranded in January. Moreover, ratings have plummeted in many stations where Cumulus Media Incorporated has talk programming. The Atlanta company in April fired several employees from Little Rock's KARN-FM-AM, 102.9-920, including long-term conservative talk host Dave Ellswick. Holland Cook, a radio consultant from Rhode Island, said there are two trends contributing to this development. Huge radio corporations are shouldering enormous debt, leading to shrinking assets in small and medium market stations. And younger audiences are losing interest in shows patterned after leading talk show hosts. Cook, whose experience lies mostly with medium-sized markets like Little Rock, said the bigger the radio company, the worse off they are. The two biggest, Cumulus and Clear Channel, are carrying untenable debt, he said. There's not enough money in nature to pay off what they owe. That results in companies deconsolidating, and sometimes that means shrinking their stations in markets like Little Rock. The upshot of this, Cook said, is that mom-and-pop stations are having a great time. This next generation of mom-and-pops that are small groups, independent and locally based, seem to have spotted the bottom, or close enough to it, he said. Changing audience. That may be good news for smaller radio stations, but not necessarily for talk show hosts. Cook said the changing audience traces back to many hosts emulating the success of big names like Limbaugh. The smaller market guys are part of a legion of Rush wannabes who read Rush's early success, Cook says. Cook lauded Limbaugh's radio skills, but pointed out that his subject matter has become increasingly one-sided and will eventually alienate his audience. Limbaugh is at his roots an entertainer, Cook said, a fact that's been misconstrued by wannabes, resulting in an I'm right, you're wrong, I talk, you listen atmosphere. Talk radio, he said, should be a two-way show where you make the audience the star rather than Limbaugh's special kind of dialogue that degenerates to a monologue. While Limbaugh and his imitators are still very popular in certain markets, particularly small ones, Cook said what will eventually doom them is demographics. Depending on where you set the hash marks, you've got 80 to 90 million millennials about to take the reins of the American economy. And to them, these people are crazy uncle acts, Cook said. It's about stuff they don't care about, and it's the same thing every day. Ultimately, that demographic is going to work against us. In the meantime, ratings speak for themselves. KARN's Nielsen audio ratings fell from 4.4 in winter 2013 to 3.4 in winter 2014. But Ellswick, the former host at KARN, who noted that he was not at liberty to say what is next in his radio career, told Arkansas Business that during his time as a host, he wasn't concerned about appealing to a younger demographic. There are some in talk business who think talk radio is a 25 to 54 demographic, he said. I believe, and Nielsen will bear me out, the talk is much more 45 plus, which isn't bad. The youngest boomer will be 50 coming up on January 1, 2015. By 2017, boomers will control 70% of the disposable income in America. Why would I try to reach a 25-year-old when a 55-year-old has the money to spend on what they want to buy? I think Clear Channel, Cumulus, and other large companies that are publicly traded have lost the real reason radio exists, and that's to serve local interests. He said members of the younger audience will listen in an entirely different way, probably on a stream in their car. Radio will become much more fragmented. However, as long as there are politicians and trillions of dollars being sucked out of taxpayer wallets, there will be people who want to discuss the different aspects of spending versus programs, etc. On the other hand, another of Arkansas's conservative talk hosts, Alice Stewart, tries to vary the viewpoints and age groups represented in her show. Stewart, an Atlanta native, came to Arkansas to work for KARK-TV Channel 4. She joined then-Governor Mike Huckabee's communications staff and then followed him on his presidential campaign in 2008. Stewart's show airs on KHTE-FM, The Voice, in Little Rock. Arkansas Business Online editor Lance Turner regularly joins her shows on Monday to promote the new weekly issue of Arkansas Business. Stewart named Limbaugh as an inspiration in her radio career, as well as other conservative hosts like Glenn Beck and Laura Ingraham. However, Stewart said, she strays from the Limbaugh model by showing both sides of a discussion. Her bent is clearly conservative, but she said she tries to have a full presentation of the issues she discusses. Stewart said, there's clearly an audience for conservative talk radio, but it's hard to quantify that in her case. KHTE changed to its current talk format in January 2013 and no longer subscribes to Nielsen audio ratings. Its last available rating was 1.3 for winter 2013, during most of which time it was still a pop music station. I approach the microphone from the standpoint of presenting both sides of the story, having an honest discussion of it, whether talking about an issue at the state capitol or Washington, D.C., or talking about two candidates running for office. People are smart enough to make up their own minds. My goal is to give them the best info they can get, and hopefully they learn something along the way. She said she never pulls any punches or catches anyone off guard. I like to think I'm respectful to all guests, she said. I have Republicans and Democrats on the show. I have a segment called Spin Room where I have a Republican and a Democrat, and they discuss back and forth and have a respectful discussion on issues. Cook recommended that in order to combat the demographic problem, talk hosts should talk about stuff that matters. We're car radio, and to me that's a proving ground, he said. 51% of listeners are driving. If we can engage them, we're doing something right. Anything you talk about, if you make the listener go, huh, and tell them something they don't know, that's impactful content. Stewart said she believes she's meeting these criteria. I'm not going to beat a topic or a story into the ground, Stewart said. I can pretty much tell when it's run its shelf life. I want to make sure to keep topics fresh or relevant. Finally, Cook suggested the talk host shouldn't invent bad news when it's not really present. How many days a week can you be told the sky is falling before you stop believing in Chicken Little, he said. But is the sky really falling for conservative radio? Doug Kreil, executive director of the Arkansas Broadcasters Association, offered one other perspective. It seems to me that a lot of this is cyclical, he said. Listeners like it when the people on talk radio support and encourage their point of view. Is the ratings drop a sign that all of the former listeners have changed their personal political stance? The elections will be a much better indicator of that than any analysis I'd provide. But it seems that kind of wholesale shift would be unlikely. In Lexington, Kentucky, this is Chris Gay for the DX Audio Service.
Here's a story from the November 1st, 1931 issue of Broadcasting Magazine, entitled New Mexican Border Stations Threaten Interference in U.S. Backed largely by American capital, 8 or 10 new broadcasting stations of substantial power are being erected in Mexico and threaten further serious interference with the operation of stations in the U.S. and Canada, according to reliable information reaching broadcasting. During the sessions of the Pan American Commercial Conference at Washington in October 1930, it was learned that these stations, for the most part, will be located along the border. In addition, XCR at Villa Acuña, new 75-kilowatt station belonging to Dr. John R. Brinkley, former owner of KFKB Milford, Kansas, already is on the air experimentally and, according to reports, has been interfering with WSB Atlanta and CKAC Montreal, as well as other stations. These stations are being constructed on the theory that American industries will advertise over them since Mexico offers a fertile market for American products. Moreover, the owners hope to cover substantial American service areas because transmission conditions are excellent in the low, flat areas of the Southwest. There are already some 40 stations in Mexico, most of them of low power, such as 100 watts or so. The number has doubled in the past year, with the stations operating on any wavelength and not adhering to any set allocation plan, since Mexico is not a party to the so-called gentleman's agreement between Canada and the United States. Frequencies have not yet been selected for the stations now under construction, but it's considered inevitable that interference will be caused once they take the air, despite the efforts of the Mexican administration to minimize such a condition. The Mexican policy seems to be to allocate new high-power stations on frequencies between clear channels used by Canada and the United States. This situation, coupled with the Brinkley case, may lead to another conference between North American nations regarding the distribution of wavelengths. The Pan American Commercial Conference adopted a resolution offered by Luis Sanchez, chief of the Department of Radio of Mexico, which, among other things, recommends that the countries of America enter into agreements to regulate communications, inasmuch as interference between radio stations is a serious obstacle to the development of international communications. He said, "This is taken to mean that before new Mexican stations go on the air, conversations at least should be had with both Canada and the United States respecting the frequencies to be used." The Brinkley situation became the center of a State Department controversy, almost coincident with the sessions of the Pan American conferences. Dr. Brinkley, whose Milford, Kansas station was deleted because of medical broadcasts considered inimical to public health, visited Washington October 16th to protest to Undersecretary of State William R. Castle against alleged representations by the State Department to Mexican authorities in protest against his Mexican station. XCR is the highest-powered station in the Western Hemisphere. For several weeks, it has been operating experimentally and is reported to be blanketing a 40-kilocycle range between 710 and 750 kilocycles. Dr. Brinkley had announced XCR would operate on 735 kilocycles, or between the clear channels of WSB and KCAC. Because of the interference caused with KMMJ, Clay Center, Nebraska, operating daylight with 1,000 watts on 740 kilocycles, he indicated while in Washington that he would shift XER to 655 kilocycles, or halfway between the clear channels of WSM Nashville on 650 and WEAF New York on 660. Dr. Brinkley told Mr. Castle that he had been prevented from entering Mexico by the present regime, and that he believed State Department protests were responsible. He demanded that he be accorded the constitutional protection guaranteed American citizens in foreign countries. Meanwhile, the commission itself was awaiting an opinion from its legal division as to whether it could prevent Dr. Brinkley from maintaining in the United States remote control studios connected to XCR in Mexico. Dr. Brinkley proposes to establish such studios in about a half dozen southwestern cities and has already negotiated for the landlines with AT&T. And we all know how the story of the goat gland doctor and the story of the high-power Mexican stations turned out. And that from Broadcasting Magazine, November 1st, 1931. Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service.
Do you know what a MARTY is? I'll bet there are plenty of you who know what it is and what it does. The MARTI is best known as the remote pickup transmitter that enables radio stations to broadcast from football games, county fairs, tractor pools, and even car dealers on a Saturday. While today all of this can be accomplished on the internet, or if you don't care about quality, the cell phone, back in the day, if you needed to do a remote broadcast quickly, you relied on the MARTI. David Johnson, business analyst for KRLD Radio in Dallas, recently spoke with George MARTI on his CEO Spotlight segment. Mr. MARTI of Cleburne, Texas, is 93 years young, and as you'll hear, can tell you a lot about broadcasting history.
You know, in researching our salute to the great folks of Cleburne, I was astounded to find a human being behind something that I had sort of taken for granted. In all these years in radio, anytime you want to do a remote from someplace other than the studio, you grabbed a MARTI. You used a MARTI, which I always assumed was an acronym for something or other. All I know is that you got a crystal clear signal over a great distance, and you could be almost anywhere. Well, the fact is, it's George MARTI, and he invented it. And he's done a lot more than that in his 94 years, and he joins us right now. It's good to have you with us.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad to find a human being behind the MARTI. How did you come to invent such a marvelous device for radio?
Well, that was very simple. When I was still in high school, I got interested in radio. That was back in the middle 30s. And back then, I lived in the country, so I was had a crystal set. I started playing with crystals, started messing around with broadcasting back in 1935 and 36. When I got out of high school in 1936, at 16 years of age, I went to a technical school that was in Fort Worth in those days for about 11 to 12 months. That was to teach you how to be a broadcast engineer. The more I studied radio and played with it, the more I got interested. And I entered from this school in Fort Worth when I was 17 years old. Well, when I was 17 and a half, I went to work as a transmitter. I got a license, FCC license. I went to work as a transmitter engineer for KFJZ at Fort Worth.
KFJZ, those call letters used to be associated with Channel 11 in television, too.
And also, it was owned by Mr. Sid Richardson.
A man with deep pockets.
Yeah. And I went to work there as a transmitter engineer. And basically, I worked there as a transmitter engineer until I was 21 years of age. Well, at that time, the Marine Corps made an offer to all technicians if they wanted to go to the very first radar school at the Naval Research Lab in Washington, D.C., they would give them a rating of sergeant if they passed. Well, I went to that school, and I joined the Marine Corps and went to that school and when I was 21 years of age. Well, by that time, I'd been in broadcasting for over 3 years, and I began to understand it, and so forth. So, but that's why I joined the Marine Corps. I was in right 1941, and I figured if I didn't, I'd be drafted, and so forth and so on. So I joined the Marine Corps, and I went to the very first radar school in Washington, D.C. And things were very interesting. I had, after I was there the first week, a couple of the engineers at the Naval Research Lab looked me up and they knew me as a ham radio operator. So basically they come over and said, "Well, Marty, what time do you have?" I said, "I have every Saturday from 1 o'clock on." He said, "Well, we open on Saturday." So those boys were radar engineers. Well, I worked with them every day. They were teaching me. They said, "We're going to teach you, when you graduate from the school, you're going to be number one."
Wow.
Well, 11 months later, I graduated from the first radar school at the Naval Research Lab. Well, I graduated number one in the class because of the help of these two engineers. I graduated first in the class. Then they invited me to be an instructor. Well, I didn't want to be an instructor there, so I recommended somebody else. And I went over to Red Corps headquarters and told them I heard that they've been looking for engineers to make installations of base stations or communication systems when they took olives from the Japanese. I said, I said, with my experience in broadcasting, amateur radio operator, I sure would like to be where I could help make those installations. Well, this was the head man of the communication of the Marine Corps, and he said, well, let me look at my... I said, yeah, I have found a place for you. A place for you, I'll put you in charge of communications in American Samoa.
Wow.
Well, so basically, he went back and told the school that I wasn't going to be an instructor. I recommended somebody else, and they were going to send me to American Samoa to be in charge of communications. So when they took an island, they'd fly me in. I'd install a base station, and I got working good where they could talk to the planes, the tanks, and everything. Then they'd get me out of there. Well, I spent 2 years been in charge of communications in American Samoa, taking these islands for 2 years. Well, basically, as a result of that, good communications, and they did, which they didn't have before then. But I saved many and many lives because we could communicate.
And that's remarkable. I know you got to come back here to the States, and you actually hand-built KCLE, which was the radio station for Cleburne.
But when I got out of the Marine Corps, I went back to work for Mr. Sid Rich and KFJZ. I worked there until 1946, then I built KCLE, got a license for it, and put KCLE on the air on Easter Sunday of 1947. I was a poor country boy just out of the Marine Corps, and I borrowed the money from a bank in Burleson, Mr. George Ransom, to put that station on the air, buy some land, just everything else. Well, I put KCLE on the air. Then you just had a few stations, the old time stations I did. Well, I owned that station, put it on the air, and I owned it for 13 years, 1960. Well, I was an engineer before I went to the Marine Corps. Then I operated the station for 13 years. I knew what equipment the stations needed. So basically, while I still had my station, I designed my equipment to do remotes.
And the rest is history, and they're still being used today by most radio stations use them.
80% of the radio stations in America, when I sold out 34 years later, 94.
That's outstanding. Then you became mayor of Cleburne, and then also you bought the bank. Which did you enjoy most?
Well, I made the most money when I bought the bank. but anyway, look, as a matter of fact, the business for remote pickup, to handle the remotes, they didn't call them remotes. They call them a Marty. Go get the Marty and do so and so and so.
Exactly.
80% of the radio stations in North America had my equipment when I went out of business, when I sold out in 1994. Worldwide, another 40% of the world had my equipment. And I'm going to tell you one funny story. The BBC would not buy my equipment. So basically, there was a very important person over there in London to get married. So CBS went over there to carry this broadcast and everything. And, well, BBC would not buy my equipment. Well, as a result, CBS just beat the tar out of them. In other words, they could go anywhere with their remote broadcast equipment and do a broadcast. Well, I'll tell you what happened. when that was over, BBC called me and said, look, we want to buy some equipment. So basically, in my life, I've had quite a few things, and I've made a lot of friends. For instance, there's a friend you don't know, Congressman Jim Wright. He used to be the Speaker of the House.
Right.
Well, I knew Congressman Jim Wright before he was a congressman, and he got elected, so I had a radio station. So I called Jim Wright every Saturday at noon. We did a 15-minute interview of what happened in Washington this week. And then when I became mayor later on, I needed some help from him, and I got the help from him. Jim Wright was a good friend of mine. So basically, there's a lot of interesting people I've known in my life, a lot of interesting things. And I was very thankful.
Yes.
And basically, right now in Johnson County, I'm having 243 kids go to college.
That's absolutely remarkable. So tell me, what does Cleburne mean to you? What does that community mean to you?
Well, look, I came here I came here when I was 18 years old. I was a farm boy up the other side of Burleson at Oak Grove. That's where I was from. And so here's I came here and I went to high school at Burleson and so forth and so on. I was just attached to Cleburne. And I lived in Tarrant County, and then I went to work at KFJZ. And then that's when I decided that Cleburne needed a radio station. Then when I moved here in 1947 after I got out of the Marine Corps, well, it was my life. First the radio station, then the manufacturing business, and I was also in the ranch business, in the Charlotte cattle business. So basically, things hit together. I started making money, and I started doing things to help people. Basically, I think it's because I saved so many lives when I volunteered to go to Southwest Pacific.
Right.
I couldn't have done the things I've done in my life if I hadn't had a lot of help.
Well, and we are all better for your life, and especially the citizens of Cleburne and Johnson County. George Marty, in your 94 years, you've done an awful lot. It'll be fun to see what you do.
4 years old next Monday.
I hurried you. I'm sorry. But we wish you a happy birthday, happy 94th birthday in advance. Our guest today, George Marty, it's good to have you with us.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. I'm David Johnson. News Radio 1080 KRLD.
That was David Johnson of 1080 KRLD Radio in Dallas interviewing George Marty on KRLD's CEO Spotlight segment. You can find additional interviews with business leaders and executives at KRLD's website, dfw.cbslocal.com/station/KRLD. Then click on audio and look for CEO Spotlight. For the DX Audio Service, I'm Wally Warbrow in Dallas, Texas.
Casey Kasem appeared in good shape when cops found him in Washington amid fears he was missing. Carrie Kasem, the adult daughter of the famed DJ, was granted a temporary conservatorship over her dad earlier this week. She said she was formulating a plan Thursday to get him back to California under the powers of her temporary conservatorship. This article is by Nancy Dillon, and it appeared in the New York Daily News on Thursday, May 15th. Famed DJ Casey Kasem appeared to be in good shape when authorities tracked him down in Washington State, officials told the Daily News Thursday. He was seated upright and was cognizant of the fact that we were there, said Kitsap County Deputy Sheriff Scott Wilson. The 82-year-old radio icon was reported missing by his daughter on Wednesday. He had all his medications. He was clean. There were no indications of neglect or abuse, Wilson said. We would have exercised our authority if there was anything suspicious. Wilson said the welfare check occurred at 3:45 p.m. Tuesday at the request of Adult Protective Services in California. On Monday, a Los Angeles County judge ordered a probe into Kasem's whereabouts after a lawyer for the DJ's wife, Jean, said he believed the ailing Top 40 legend was out of the country. The judge granted adult daughter Carrie Kasem a temporary conservatorship over her dad and expressed concern as he ordered the investigation. It was not clear Thursday where Adult Protective Services got the Washington State address, but it was a private residence in Port Orchard, Wilson said. The deputies made contact with the homeowner first. Then they were introduced to both Mr. and Mrs. Kasem, who said they were on vacation visiting lifelong friends, Wilson said. We stayed about 40 minutes, checked everything out, and passed along all the information. He said his agency was contacted again on Wednesday after Carrie Kasem filed a missing persons report with police in Santa Monica, California, where Casey Kasem was staying in a nursing home until last week. Right now, we consider this a civil issue, he said. Carrie Kasem said she still had grave concerns about her dad's well-being and was formulating a plan Thursday to get him back to California under the powers of her temporary conservatorship. We're trying to find a way to enforce it, she told the news Thursday, declining to elaborate. Carrie Kasem previously told the news that she believed her estranged stepmom, Jean, was in hiding with the radio icon on an Indian reservation in Washington. The home where he was found was not on a reservation, Wilson said. Carrie Kasem and her two siblings from her father's previous marriage have been locked in a public legal battle with Jean since last year. They claim Jean barred them from seeing their dad after he became too frail to visit them on his own. The kids originally thought their dad had Parkinson's disease, but later learned he suffers from Lewy body dementia, a progressive disease that has left him barely able to speak and eating with a feeding tube. I worry immensely that he's not getting the right medical attention. He has to be in a facility with 24-hour care. Traveling causes great stress, fear, and confusion for someone in my dad's state. It might be taking a tremendous toll, Carrie previously told the news. Carrie said the shock of her dad's appearance hit hard because she and her sister Julie were allowed to visit him last Tuesday for the first time in months. It was amazing. He was alert, awake, happy, and totally knew who we were. There were a few words here and there. We told him we'd try to visit him again soon, and he asked us when, Carrie told the news. I think they were giving him really great nutrition at the nursing home, and his brain was working better than before, Carrie said. In my opinion, Jean is worried about us meeting again. She's worried about the money. She thinks we're going to get him to change the will. She's out of her mind. As I've said all along, we're not going to contest the will. We're all successful enough on our own. She can take the house. We just want our dad back, she previously said. Jean, 59, had a small role in the 1984 hit movie Ghostbusters, but is best known for playing the ditzy wife of Nick Tortelli on the hit 80s sitcom Cheers. She married the voice of Shaggy from Scooby-Doo in 1980, and the couple has one daughter together, Liberty, now 23. Jean's lawyer, Craig Marcus, had no comment when reached by the news on Monday. Marcus argued in court that Jean had the right to move her husband as she saw fit.
Enforcement against pirate radio hurts underserved communities, advocates say. The Boston Globe. This article by Kathleen Conti and appeared on the website bostonglobe.com. A government-enforced shutdown last month of three unlicensed community radio stations providing programming to ethnically diverse neighborhoods underscored the prevalence of so-called pirate radio, not just in Boston, but also in its suburbs. Of the three stations raided by federal agents, one transmitted out of Everett, Brockton, and Boston, while another was solely Brockton-based, according to the U.S. Attorney's Boston office, which initiated the cases. Since 2003, the Federal Communications Commission has taken enforcement action 37 times against illegal radio stations operating in eastern Massachusetts. The bulk of those actions have come against low-frequency stations in Brockton, broadcasting to the city's vast Cape Verdean and Haitian populations. Although illegal, such radio stations are a vital resource in immigrant and minority neighborhoods that are underserved by commercial mainstream broadcasters, advocates contend. In addition to playing music with an ethnic flair that's heard nowhere else on the dial, Many unlicensed community radio stations feature talk programming that encourages listener participation on topical issues such as immigration, local and international politics, and sports from back home. It's sad to see that federal agents shut them down, because even though they are pirate stations, they truly are the main source of communication in those communities, said Yesenia Afaro, Director of Organizing at Chelsea Collaborative, a social justice nonprofit. It certainly has a negative impact when they shut these down. They are the main outreach vehicle for people who speak a different language. Some outfits, like Radio Uganda Boston in Waltham, opt to have an online presence outside of radio. But many new immigrants and low-income families have no access to computers or can't afford the monthly bills for internet access, Alfaro said. Many also cannot read, even in their native language, rendering radio the only source for information, she added. Despite the potential for tens of thousands of dollars in fines and seizure of transmitting equipment, pirates continue to take the risk in order to serve the underserved, said Bruce Connie, a longtime radio enthusiast from Nashua and the international radio columnist for the National Radio Club magazine, DX News. Even if they have tried to operate legally, most individuals have been priced out of potential station ownership under relaxed FCC rules that have the majority of radio stations owned by large corporations like Clear Channel and CBS, Connie said in an email. There are also no available open broadcasting channels to be had in Greater Boston. So an interested buyer can only wait for an existing radio station to become available for sale, again, driving up the cost of entry, he wrote. Licensed commercial radio stations in the Boston metro area have abandoned service to the inner city, so most pirate radio stations in Boston are filling a void. Among those shut down last month was Radio Teleboston, which transmitted at 100.1 FM out of homes on Walnut Street in Everett and North Manchester Street in Brockton, and two locations in the Mattapan and Dorchester neighborhoods of Boston, according to court documents. The operator was listed as Gerlin Cesar of Brockton. A man who answered the phone of a number listed for Cesar Gerlins in Brockton stated that he only spoke Creole and was unable to comment. The other Brockton station, 88.7 FM, was transmitting out of a two-family house on Crescent Street. Federal agents sent a notice last August to building owner Solange Germain after receiving a complaint that the station was causing interference with Boston station WERS on 88.9 FM. Agents seized the station's equipment last month. Germain could not be reached for comment. The stations were shut down for violating the Communications Act of 1934, which bans operation of unlicensed radio stations. Due to the FCC's limited enforcement staff, some stations operate unmonitored for long periods of time, said Assistant U.S. Attorney Christine Witchers, who is prosecuting the three cases from last month. Even when the FCC becomes aware of an unlicensed station, usually after complaints from licensed operators, it sends multiple notices to operators asking them to shut down voluntarily before taking more aggressive action, such as seizing equipment or issuing fines, she said. I think it's sort of silly when people say the FCC is trying to put out of business good community stations serving people, Witcher said. To me, it's like, look at that person. They're so nice driving the elderly to appointments, but they don't have a driver's license. Some pirate station operators will voluntarily shut down after receiving a violation notice from the FCC, but only temporarily. In many cases, even after equipment is seized, the same pirate station will be back on the air within months, based on the number of FCC notices issued to repeat offenders.
Brockton City Councilor Moises M. Rodriguez said that 99% of the elected officials in this community have gone on those stations, including me. Among the most popular in the community is Brockton Heat, an unlicensed station that serves the Cape Verdean and Haitian communities, he said. The stations provide some valuable, vital information to the community, Rodriguez said. None of us connected or otherwise are proponents of illegality in any way. But there's a great need for information reaching into these bilingual communities, especially if you're a bilingual community other than the Hispanic community. You have absolutely no way of getting or gathering information at all from licensed radio stations in the area. While an increasing number of unlicensed station operators are making the switch from radio to the unregulated online world, many still choose traditional radio because equipment like transmitters, especially used gear, is relatively inexpensive, said T. Barton Carter, a professor of communication law at Boston University. Opening a station can cost tens of thousands of dollars up front, not including application and certification fees, whereas illegal stations can run on just a few hundred dollars worth of equipment easily purchased online, he said. There just is an availability issue, Carter said. A large commercial station, he said, is going to try to find the largest audience. So you can argue that that does prevent people from being served, very specific minorities. To address this, Congress approved the Local Community Radio Act, which opened up low-power FM stations for non-commercial uses. But there were only a few of those licenses available in the region. A window to apply for a low-power FM license opened briefly last fall, from October 17 to November 14. But it is unknown when or whether there will be another opportunity, Carter said. This is why Radio Uganda Boston is only available online, said Joffrey Sirico, the station's public relations director. Organizers attempted to lease airtime at a licensed radio station, but at $2,500 for each three-hour block. It was an investment the station could not afford, Sirico said. Priced out of the airwaves and not interested in operating without a license, Radio Uganda Boston has been streaming solely online since 2009 from Waltham, home to one of the largest concentrations of Ugandans outside of Africa. The station has become a go-to source for immigrants learning to navigate a new culture and trying to find local resources such as job postings and health centers. It is also a mandatory stop for Ugandan politicians, he said. Sirico, best known in the community by his radio name Simple, said he has noticed as of late that more users are accessing the site from smartphones, giving programming greater reach. Research shows that an increasing number of people now own the internet-capable cell phones, which could have an impact on the future of pirate radio. Even cell phone companies known for inexpensive plans are offering smartphones to their customers, said Alexandra Babist, program manager at the nonprofit Watch Community Development Corporation in Waltham, where she teaches English as a second language, mainly to Central Americans. Many new immigrants have pay-as-you-go cell phones, she said, and all of those are smartphones now. So, they may have more access to the internet, even if they don't have a computer at home. Although being online allows Radio Uganda Boston to reach a global audience, Sirico said, having a home on the broadcast dial would be ideal to reach those with no computer or internet access. I think it's very important for our people coming in, immigrants. It gives them a sense of direction in terms of starting a new life, Sirico said. We'd love to be on the dial radio.
And that's it for this edition of the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for June 2014. You have a nice summer. We're going to be taking some vacation now. So 73, good DX, and get out and support the radio hobby.
A friendly word.
WIBC. WIBC.